Our annual invasion is upon us. The Japanese beetles have arrived. We'll talk about the damage they do, how long they'll be here, and what can and cannot be done to fight them. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day. Iowa State University entomologist Donald Lewis will be here to tell us everything we need to know about the Japanese beetle and to answer your questions about other insects you encounter. ISU Extension horticulturist Richard Giron will also be here to answer your questions about the plants you'd like to grow or grow better. Email talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Join the conversation after the news.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Valley View Village, an adult community offering a complete continuum of care, including independent living, assisted living, skilled and long-term care. Learn more about this community at valleyviewvillage.org.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today, and the radio studio seems to be clear of Japanese beetles this morning, but they seem to be pretty much everywhere else across the state of Iowa. And we're going to start off the hour talking about this invasive species. A little later on, Iowa State University Extension horticulturist Richard Giron will be here to answer your questions. With us right now, Iowa State University Professor of Entomology, Donald Lewis. Hello, Donald.
Hello, Charity. Good to see you again.
It's nice to have you here. And the Japanese beetles, we've had a little bit of a break, or some of us have, after the polar vortex winter. It seemed like we just didn't see quite as many of them, but that's changing this year.
It has just been incredible in isolated spots. And that's the interesting thing about Japanese beetle this year and every year, is that some people have a lot. Some trees are completely turned brown from the defoliation by the Japanese beetle adults. And other people don't have any, other trees nearby don't have any. So it's always these isolated spots, but the populations in the isolated spots this year have been incredibly high, especially this early in the season of Japanese beetles.
So this is earlier than usual?
We always have Japanese beetles at the end of June, but they are usually spread out. They emerge over an extended period of time through about the first 3 to 4 weeks of July. This year, for some reason, it just seems like they all came at once. So we had this huge run-up in the population in the last week of June over the weekend of the 4th of July. So where we usually get kind of a warning, oh, look, there's a few Japanese beetles, I've got time to do something. This year, if you saw a few Japanese beetles one day, your tree was defoliated the next day. It just seemed like the population exploded so fast this year compared to what we've seen in the past.
And since we can't predict this happening, are other entomologists studying these cycles so maybe we can predict a little bit better in the future?
Oh, I wish we knew. And the thing is, there are no simple answers to these kinds of complex questions. That we'll start with the life cycle and remind people that the Japanese beetle adults they are looking at on their linden tree, their roses, their grapevines, their azaleas right now, those beetles are 1 year old. They were born, their eggs were laid a whole year ago last summer. That had to have been a very successful egg laying for that previous generation. Those eggs hatch into grubs that live in the soil for about 10 to 11 months out of the year. So last fall must have been really good for grub survival. Then last winter had to have been good with not a lot of prolonged frost deep in the soil. That had to be good. So there are all these variables that you start to take into consideration. How many eggs were laid? How many eggs survived? How many larvae hatched? How many larvae survived? What was the winter like? What was the spring like? What was the weather at the time of emergence? There's just a whole lot of variables to try to pin down exactly why this happens, when it happens. So we have some vague notions and we have some general ideas, but to your question, is anybody doing research? We're keeping records, we're looking at this, we're trying to make better predictions, but the beetles always seem to be a step ahead of us.
All right. Now, as you mentioned, it seems like they appeared overnight and then your tree is defoliated. What kinds of trees do they seem to prefer? Certainly on my property, the apple trees have gotten it this year.
Apple trees and crab apples are high on the list. Peach trees, if you have one that hasn't already died in Iowa, they really love peach trees. But at the top of the list for most landscapes are the linden trees. And linden trees always take a hit. It seems like the tops will turn brown a little bit first, and then they'll move down through the tree. So linden trees are high on that list. But anything in the fruit tree group, that includes crab apples, apples, and peaches, and cherries, and plums, and so forth. Then in the ornamentals, it's also roses. Roses seem to be one of their favorites, but people get cannas that are defoliated by Japanese beetles. So it's such a huge group. And if you read different resources, you get different numbers, but it's somewhere between about 300 and 400 different kinds of plants are recorded as hosts for the Japanese beetle adult. Grapes are always high on the list as well. Raspberries will be high on the list a little later in the season as people begin to look to harvest their crop. So I think we've hit the high points, but if we haven't named your plant, please don't be offended because there's this huge group of everything else where we could find them.
All right. So I've been trying to convince the Japanese beetles at our house to eat the mulberry trees instead of the apple trees. They are unconvinced. Obviously, that's not a way to control, but what does work?
Not much. And there are no easy answers. And that's the issue with a lot of this. If you had a small rose bush, if you had a small apple tree, and if you had done this in the third week of June, you could have put fine netting over the tree, and that would have created a barrier between the Japanese beetles that are arriving from all over the county to feed on your tree. So screening will work if you do it early enough and in some circumstances. Hand picking works if you have a few beetles on a small plant or
right.
a small number of plants.
So often it's thousands, tens of thousands, maybe hundreds of thousands.
Tens of thousands. So it becomes your hobby. You have to quit your day job to stay home and pick off Japanese
right,
beetles.
Right, right. I was mowing and I would go under a tree that was covered in Japanese beetles, and then I was covered in Japanese beetles. So that's a way to get a few down.
It's a few. That's right. You can dislodge a few for a short period of time. Another option is to live with it. Defoliated deciduous trees are not dead. And that's one of those things that people will call up and say, oh, they've killed my tree because all the leaves are brown. No, leaves turn brown on linden trees and apple trees every fall. And those trees aren't dead because the leaves are brown. They're just defoliated. So one of the things you can do is live with it. And that's not easy to do because we love the green look rather than the brown lacy look. But we could tolerate the damage on ornamentals. You hate to see it on your roses and your food crops, but it is possible. The final option is to spray early, spray often. And this is a difficult thing to do if a tree has any size at all. It's difficult to find an insecticide that will work over a long period of time. But I checked this morning with the Iowa Department of Agriculture, and there are 785 different insecticide products labeled for Japanese beetle control in the state of Iowa. So almost anything has Japanese beetles on the label, but there's this problem of how often can you treat? And on apple trees, it'll say don't treat more than once every 7 days. Well, that's not often enough because the insecticide doesn't last that long and more beetles come in.
So, and you have to think about the impact of what you're doing as well. Is it worth more than the foliage on the trees?
It's a tough decision to make. That if I keep the green leaves on the tree, what was the impact of everything that was being sprayed? Now, that being said, if we use these modern insecticides according to label directions, and if we follow the instructions that you've heard every extension entomologist say for the last 80 years, do not spray trees in bloom. If you follow that rule, the impact on bees and pollinators is going to be small. But there is an impact from using that much insecticide. Now, the other one that people will talk about is, why don't I use a systemic insecticide that I put into the plant? Well, you have to do that far in advance. You can't do that on a food crop under normal circumstances. And the tree that we're trying to protect, the linden tree, is blooming at the time that insecticide would be inside the tree in order to kill the Japanese beetle. So systemic is not a good answer. We're down to just a few small number of products that we feel good about. One of those would be surround. Surround is a clay material that you mix with water and you put it on the plant, and when it dries, it is a deterrent for beetle feeding. Another one of those is neem. The botanical insecticide neem, spelled N-E-E-M, is another feeding deterrent. It doesn't kill any beetles. It just makes them go somewhere else and feed, at least for a few days, but then you're going to have to reapply. So there are no easy answers is what we keep coming back to.
Right. So if you have a small rose bush, that might be something you could do. If you've got an apple orchard or even a couple of trees, that's not very practical.
It's not very practical. No. And the other thing people will say is, oh, if I treated my lawn for grubs, wouldn't that protect my apple tree? The answer is no. These beetles are way too mobile, moving around the county, and the small amount of earth that you control in your yard where you have eliminated the white grub, the larval stage of the Japanese beetle, is a minuscule amount of the breeding area that these beetles have for reproduction. So you will still have Japanese beetles even if you used an insecticide to kill white grubs in your lawn last year.
All right. Now, of course, a lot of the lawn and garden shops and the services, they want to sell you a product that's going to get rid of Japanese beetles. There's one out there that you see quite commonly that you absolutely do not recommend because it doesn't work. So let's hit that one again, Donald.
Are you talking about traps?
I am talking about traps.
Okay. Traps are...
And I think you're having an impact because I don't see them as often as I used to.
Oh, I'm not going to claim an impact. I think people are just wising up on their own. The Japanese beetle traps are emotionally satisfying in that you get to see and smell hundreds to thousands of dead Japanese beetles. That's thousands out of what you described as your tree as hundreds of thousands. So a trap is not going to make an impact on the overall population. It's not going to bring down the population significantly enough to save your tree. Further, research has proven that the Japanese beetle traps attract more beetles than they catch. So if you're not going to follow our recommendations, if you do buy a Japanese beetle trap, place it as far from your crop as you can so that you're at least luring the beetles away from the tree that you're trying to protect.
All right. And how long do we expect them to stick around? Because they came a little early this year. How long will we still be struggling with them?
They came early. They came like gangbusters. We normally see them diminish in August. Occasionally, we'll see some on into September, but the real peak of the population used to be kind of mid-July. And I think we're at the peak of the population of early July. So I think by the end of July, we'll stop talking about this and we'll go on to worrying about something else.
All right. So you think they'll go a little early this year, too?
I'm predicting they'll go a little early, but my success rate with predictions is not all that good. So don't bet money on this, Charity.
All right. We will wait. I don't think anybody's taking bets on this. We'll wait and see. We're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment with me, Iowa State University entomologist Donald Lewis. Coming up in just a moment, Richard Geron, ISU Extension Horticulture Specialist, will be here. They will answer your questions at 866-780-9100. These aren't the Japanese beetles. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today. With me, Donald Lewis, Iowa State University Extension entomologist, ISU Extension horticulturist. Richard Geron is also here. Hello, Richard.
Good morning.
Thank you for being here. Do you have Japanese beetles in your yard, too?
Just a few. I don't have the plants they like. I have maples and oaks and lilacs. They don't like those, so I don't really
good
see that
planning.
Many. Just very fortunate.
Absolutely. All right. Well, we have a lot of people who have Japanese beetle problems, not surprisingly. We'll get to the phones. You can join our conversation at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And of course, you don't just have to ask about Japanese beetles. All plants, all insects are fair game today. Dan is on the line in Albion. Hi, Dan.
Good morning.
What's your question? Well,
we have an ornamental crabapple tree in our front yard that's suffered a lot of abuse from the winds over the last 16 years. And in order to replace it, at some point we put in a lilac tree that we're hoping will grow up and provide a lot of shade for the front of the house. The question is, the apple tree, the crab apple rather, has developed about one-third to half of its leaves are turning brown. They don't look like they're dead, but they're definitely brown. We're worrying it's some kind of disease and wondering if it could spread to the lilac tree and whether I should cut down that apple tree now instead of waiting a couple more years and lose the shade that it is still providing.
Okay, the leaves, basically, are they turning yellow before they turn brown?
No, I haven't seen yellow.
Okay.
No, they're just kind of brownish.
Okay. And is it scattered throughout the entire tree?
Well, what's left of the tree.
Okay. My first thought would be apple scab, which is a very common fungal disease on apples and crab apples. Typically, it causes spotting of the foliage. The affected leaves typically usually turn yellow and then fall off. And the weather conditions in the spring are very important because apple scab is favored by cool, wet weather in the spring. And we did have a very wet May and early June. So we're seeing a lot of apple scab. It does cause leaf drop. It will not kill the tree. The damage is mainly aesthetic. They don't look very attractive. It will not go to the lilac. It won't. It basically is found on basically apples and crab apples.
Okay, so I can continue to let that apple grow for a couple more years.
You can, yep.
Until the other one grows up
right.
enough.
Preventing it is very difficult. You'd have to spray the tree with a fungicide maybe three or four times in the spring as the foliage was developing. Most people basically choose to do nothing because it will not kill the tree. The damage is mainly aesthetic, so they just kind of ignore it.
It's certainly not worth putting any effort into.
No, I don't think
so. If you could see the tree, it's really ugly. Like
okay.
I say, it's still providing some shade to the house, and we just don't want to cut it down yet until that lilac tree grows at least a few more feet.
Right. And if it's still blooming well in the spring, I would keep it.
Oh, it was beautiful, yeah.
Okay, I'd keep
it. The blooms were great. So. Okay, appreciate it. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot for your call. 866-780-9100 is the number. Here's a question from Crystal in Ankeny. She says, Japanese beetles have attacked an apple tree I planted 3 years ago, and in less than a day, they destroyed 60 to 70% of the leaves. I treated with 7 and now have hundreds of dead beetles under the tree. My question now is, what can I do to help the tree recover? I dutifully listened to Richard and pulled all of the apples the first 2 years, and I was really looking forward to enjoying my first harvest, but should I pull the apples to give the tree a better chance at recovery? Is there anything else I can do?
I think what I would do, it's a young tree yet. We're having kind of a dry period, and so I think I'd be watering that tree. I would do so every week to 10 days, really water it nice and thoroughly, soak it. And yes, I might consider removing the actual apples because...
Oh, that's a bummer.
I know, but... You're putting a lot of stress on that tree, and they can handle a certain amount, but at some point they reach a breaking point. So I would be inclined at least to maybe thin maybe some of the fruit, take off some, leave some maybe, and take off others.
All right, but water the tree.
Yes, and I would keep on doing that through the summer, July, August, September, into fall, if it's dry.
All right, next question from John in Des Moines. A few weeks ago, I went to my garden mid-morning, and amongst all of the wonderful pollinators, I found one spotted and one striped cucumber beetle on the flowering head of my dill plant.
Mm-hmm.
Were these beetles interested in the flowers, maybe taking refuge? Could they be feeding on my dill plant? I do have cucumbers in my garden and was wondering what's going on with these insects.
Well,
you get to play psychologist,
yeah.
Insect psychology today.
And the short answer is everybody has to be somewhere. And cucumber beetles spread around the county. They don't stay right in the garden. They don't stay right on the melon farm of our cucumber and muskmelon producers around the state. They travel around. And as with most adult beetles, they don't need to eat a lot, but occasionally they have to replenish their moisture or their sugar supply. And flowers will do that for them, where they can feed on a little nectar, and that is both moisture and energy source. I think that's all that was happening. They were resting on the flowers. They may have been attracted to the light colors for a brief period of time. Out for a stroll. When it's time to reproduce, though, they will be on the right plant. That's the Nature has given them the ability to pick the right plant for their reproduction, and that's where they'll be. We've had kind of an easy year with cucumber beetles from what I've heard from growers and from researchers around the state. So the fact that he saw one of each is kind of what we're experiencing elsewhere. There haven't been a lot of them this year, so we've been lucky that way so far.
All right, let's go back to the phones. Fred is up next in Davenport. Hi, Fred.
Yeah, hi. I have a Dickens-esque tale from Davenport of two cucumbers side by side. For one, it's the best of years, and the other one next to it over 3 days just wilted away. And first I thought cucumber beetles, like we've just been talking about, but I've been spraying with seven, and I cut the stem, and there's no goo in there, and I haven't seen any. So I'm just kind of at loss for what happened, because they're just side by side, and one is doing just gorgeous bearing fruit, and the other one just wilted away.
I'll let Richard give the actual answer in a minute, but it's a little too early to expect cucumber wilt. That doesn't usually happen until the vines start to run. So you've done a good job of protecting by controlling the cucumber beetles. We wouldn't expect cucumber wilt this early in the season. So what is the right answer, Richard?
Well, unfortunately, the vine crops have a number of things disease-wise that will cause wilting and sudden death. So it may not be bacterial wilt, but I'm suspecting something else. And I would be inclined to pull that plant and destroy it.
Okay. Right.
Which is what Charles Dickens would have done, clearly.
Well, I've gotten cucumbers from it already, so I guess it's...
But if it's dying, you want to basically pull it up, remove it from the area, and destroy it. That's the best strategy.
All right, Fred, thanks a lot for your call. Next up, Kevin in Davenport. Hi, Kevin. Kevin, are you there? We may have lost Kevin along the way. We'll go to Francis in Cedar Rapids. Hi, Francis.
Good morning. My wife wants me to ask you, what kind of fertilizer would you recommend for a hydrangea, which is the large type? It's not setting any blooms, and she was wondering what you'd recommend to fertilize that with. And then I'll just quickly hit this subject. I have a 60-year-old green ash tree in my backyard, and I've been treating it the last few years, I hope, with fertilizer plugs, and I like that real well. And then I got one other thing I'll throw at you. I have a pear tree, a small pear tree, and I topped it, and it turned out to be beautiful. But, you know, I've got that trunk, the trunk of the tree, taped together with tie wraps because it's such poor health. Mm-hmm. It produces beautiful pears.
Nursing it along.
Now, as far as the hydrangea, what type is it? Do you know? Is it the big leaf?
I would say it's a big leaf. It's not a 6-inch. It's a big leaf. So,
okay. What kind of flowers does it have? Are they white, pink, blue?
I think we're getting the pink.
Okay. As far as fertilizer, I would apply probably like a 10-10-10, which is a all-purpose garden fertilizer, and I would fertilize in the spring of the year, probably mid to late April. And that would be basically food for the plant. If you want to change the color, then you have to either add lime or sulfur to change the color. But as far as plant health, I would just use like a 10-10-10.
Okay, I'll sprinkle some of that around.
Right, in the spring of the year. You typically don't want to do that at this time of year.
And
that's because if you fertilize a tree or shrub in midsummer, what you may end up doing is encouraging a late flush of growth, and that growth may not have time to harden before winter. So we typically want to apply the fertilizer in the spring of the year.
Okay. Got a beautiful little 6-inch out one out there in one of her planter boxes, just pretty as could be, but this large one just doesn't want to do the thing. Okay, we'll try that.
Aren't pear trees always kind of ugly, Richard?
Well, sometimes.
Yeah.
Not always.
You ought to see the trunk on this one. It's just rotted, and every which way you wouldn't think it could get enough sap up to make pears.
Well, I would say enjoy it as long as you have it, because you could lose it very quickly in a storm.
I'm anticipating that. My biggest battle with my pears and not getting to harvest them is the squirrel. He loves them too.
Well,
he gets half of the crop every year on me. Okay, thanks a lot.
Yeah, thanks a lot for your call, Francis. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can also send an email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Linda is up next in Des Moines. Hi, Linda.
Hi.
Hi, what's your question?
Hello. We have a problem with wasps and hornets in our backyard. They seem to want to make a nest everywhere. Everywhere you can imagine, in the barbecue, on the house, under the deck. Is there a natural solution to diminish those or get rid of them completely?
Oh, I suppose the most natural solution is to sneak up on them at night and crush them where the nests are, if you can reach them. Wasps, we do have more wasps than it seems like we used to have, and part of it is there's a different species of wasp now in the state of Iowa that wasn't here 10 to 15 years ago, and this European paper wasp loves residential areas, it loves urban areas, and it loves to build on our structures. One of the easy things to do is to buy an aerosol wasp and hornet spray. This will shoot 10 to 15 feet. You can go at night and spray the nests as they're starting, and that will discourage them. Many of these sprays produce a foam which sort of coats the nest so you can actually see what you've done, and it actually lingers on there. But as far as a repellent, I have never heard of anything that we could sort of use widespread that would keep wasps from finding their ideal nesting sites and getting started there. So our best approach for wasp control is to either live with them if they're out of the way, or destroy the nests as early as we find them in early summer before they have a chance to build up a population.
And why do you think they would be so attracted to this one space?
Oh, I think we all have them. It could be that everything is just right in terms of humidity, sunlight, shelter. We know they love protected locations, which is why they're frequently under the barbecue. It's why they're under the eaves of the house. The other thing wasps, especially the paper wasps, need is a good supply of caterpillars, because that's the food that they feed to their offspring. We could think of wasps as beneficial because they're in the garden catching little caterpillars. They bring them back to that nest. They chop caterpillars up into little pieces of sushi that they feed to the larvae. So it could just be a whole combination of environment plus available food supply that keeps them coming back to this area.
All right. Well, Linda, good luck. Thanks a lot for your call. And let's get a couple more email questions in here. This one's from Mike. He says, last year I grew a couple of habanero pepper plants and they bore plenty of fruit. Unfortunately, they were plagued with tiny white flying insects and I lost most of them. What are these pests and how can I control them either organically or chemically?
Little flying insects that are white and on our vegetable crops are usually white flies. White fly is not a fly. It's a tiny little sap-feeding insect related to aphids. That's not a real common garden problem in Iowa, so it's kind of surprising that he would have enough of them. We see white flies late in the season. We see white flies in greenhouses, but usually outdoors, the natural predators and so forth keep them down. Start early. If the first time you see one of these white flies, spray the undersides of the leaves with insecticidal soap. Insecticidal soap is a detergent that you buy at the garden center. You mix it with water. You apply it as an insecticide. It's not the dishwashing liquid from under your sink. It's a special product that you buy. You mix with water, and it kills on contact, which means if you sprinkle it on top of the leaves, nothing happens. You have to spray the undersides of the leaves to get control of aphids, spider mites, and in his situation, white flies.
All right. Here's a question from Cindy near Ames. She says, Japanese beetles have only been in Iowa for a while. Do we even know what impact they have on native plant species that are found in Iowa but not further east? They really damage prairie desmodiums. Do we know which other native plants are being hard hit and what ecological impact that will have?
That's a great question. And I don't think I have paid enough attention to prairie plants or native plants, but there has to be some impact. In answer to her question, the Japanese beetle was discovered in the United States in 1916. So we've passed the 110th anniversary of that insect in, we just passed the 100th anniversary of that insect in the United States. It was discovered in Iowa in 1994. So we have had it for a period of time in the eastern half of the state. It's now found in 69 counties around the state, and that includes all but the northwest corner, where we still have not had it reported. What it's doing out in the prairies, I really don't know. That's a great question, and I'll be asking my prairie enthusiasts and colleagues what they are noticing this year.
All right, maybe your graduate students as well.
You know, go stand in the sun in the prairie and tell me what you see.
All right. Here's a quick question from Alan Ames. I'm interested in purchasing variations of flowering hydrangea currently on sale. Do you recommend deflowering this time of year to encourage establishment?
Oh, I don't think I would. I would enjoy the flowers. Just make sure they're well watered through the summer into early fall.
All right. And so a lot of things are on sale this time of year.
Right. Just make sure they're good quality, healthy plants when you buy them. And then when you put them in the ground, make sure they're well watered until the ground does freeze this fall, because they won't have much of a root system. And if you neglect the watering, they could easily die. So
all right. And when you go do look at plants on sale at the garden center, some don't look so good. So if they don't look so good, maybe pass that one by.
It's not a good deal if it doesn't look good.
All right. We're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. With me, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist Richard Giron. Donald Lewis is here, professor of entomology at Iowa State University. They are here to answer your questions about plants and insects. Give us a call, 866-780-9100. Tweet us at IPR Talk or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It's Horticulture Day today. With me, Iowa State University entomologist Donald Lewis, ISU Extension horticulturist Richard Giron, here to answer your questions. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. Email talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Sue is up next in Ames. Hi, Sue.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What's your question?
My question is, I live in a townhouse, and there's no timber, there's no trees in my area. I just have a few small plants, some herbs, and I have a swarm of beetles, and I don't know where they're coming from. I put out three bags already, traps, and they're full within 2 days.
Mm-hmm.
Where are the beetles coming from, and what can I do to get rid of them aside from the bags, or should I even be using the bags? Is that too much am I attracting them?
Yes, you are attracting them, but we don't know exactly from how far, so don't put the bags close to anything valuable. So mm-hmm. We usually don't see a lot of Japanese beetles on herbs, and the beetles themselves do not feed on grasses. So it's not the lawn that they're going to be hurting, but ornamentals like trees and shrubs and flowers, they could be feeding on. Japanese beetle is highly mobile. We have golf courses that, an 18-hole golf course is about 100 acres, and they treat the turf grass so they don't produce any white grubs in the soil, and yet they will have Japanese beetles on their trees and flowers because they move so well from other areas. So you don't have to raise your own. You just put out a trap, they will come. You plant a linden tree, they will come. You plant a rose, they will come, and they will be there eventually. So
I take away the trap, will they not come?
They're not going to come from as far, but if there is a nearby source, if there's places where the larvae have been produced in the soil, they will be there. But I would just make sure the traps are moved away from anything that you're trying to protect. The traps attract more than they catch, so don't leave them close to what you're trying to favor. And it feels good to see a whole bag full of dead beetles, but you're not really changing the environment any by doing that. So if it makes you feel good, it's okay. Otherwise, you're really not protecting things with that technology.
Well, it kind of grosses me out, so maybe I'll just stop doing it.
Yeah, it's not a very pleasant smell, is it?
All right. Well, Sue, thank you very much for your call. 866-780-9100 is the number. Tracy's up next in Waterloo. Hi, Tracy.
Hi. I heard the conversation about the gentleman who had whitefly on his pepper.
Uh-huh.
And I also heard that they were saying, you know, to spray with insecticidal soap that mm-hmm. you buy at the garden store, not your soap from under the kitchen sink.
Right.
So my question is this. I have a really large garden with a lot of ornamentals that beetles, Japanese beetles, really like. So for several years, I've really been pretty, I've had some really good luck using dish soap and water to deter them and to kill them. So is that a problem?
It's.
I mean, am I doing something that I shouldn't be doing?
So you're using the soapy water to knock them off and let them drown in the... is that what you're doing?
Well, no, they don't really fall off right away, but they do lie there and kind of die. My understanding was that the soap affects the shell so that they can't fly as well, that it hurts their covering.
Yes.
That was my understanding in the article that I initially read. And so I just, you know, plus they don't like the taste of it on the plant. So as a deterrent, I spray the plants. And then if they do get on the plants, then I spray the beetles.
Okay.
Is this anything, am I doing anything wrong?
Not really. On contact, insecticidal soaps may impact the membranes and work on the insects. I think you used the right word, that it hurts them. I'm not convinced that it's going to kill them, but it may knock them off for a brief period. The problem with dishwashing detergent, and I would say you have been lucky to not run into the problem so far, and that is detergents can be toxic to plants, especially modern dishwashing liquids that have surfactants and grease cutters and extra perfumes and hand softeners. There's a whole lot of things in there that could be toxic to the plant. In fact, you can go to the garden center and buy a detergent that is a weed killer or a moss killer.
Yeah.
So it's just this roll of the dice whether your detergent is going to be toxic to insects or toxic to plants or both or neither. And I think you've been lucky that you haven't seen that problem on plants. So you've gotten away with it so far. You're pressing your luck. There's no reason to stop doing what's working for you. My guess is you're creating more of a deterrent action than an actual control, and maybe that's all you need.
All right. Well, Tracy, thanks a lot, and I hope things keep going well in your yard. John is on the line next in Madison County. Hi, John.
Hi, it's Big John from Madison County.
Hi, what's your question?
Well, I got some Blue Lake pole beans, and I went out there the other day, and there's little round beetles on them. They piggyback with other ones, and they're kind of red and shiny and green and shiny.
Yep.
They're just eating up my beans, and I didn't know what they were. They're like a bean bug?
No, they're the Japanese beetle. That's the one that everybody's talking about
like
right
the
now.
Ladybug-looking one?
No, it's not. No. Okay. We have two insects in Iowa. One is the Japanese beetle that feeds on the fruit, foliage, and flowers of 350 different plants. It's about 3/8 to a 1/2 inch in length, bright, shiny green on the front, coppery red on the wing covers. Japanese beetle is like the June bugs. The multicolored Asian lady beetle is a ladybug that is orange with black spots. We have had this confusion for going on 20 years now. Asian and Japanese got confused in people's minds a long time ago, and we're still sorting it out. Multicolored Asian lady beetle is a ladybug. Japanese beetle is a scarab that feeds on plants. Now, part of the reason I think people hate Japanese beetles so much is what you just described. We frequently see them feeding on our plants. The males and females are coupling together as they climb around, and it really appears that Japanese beetles have more fun than we do.
Looks like getting up and something. And then I also have these little purple millipedes or centipedes or like silverfish, but there's thousands of them. They're all over. They're even inside my house I don't even know how they get in there because I've used pesticide and everything, and I can find them like right in the middle of the house.
Yep.
They're little bitty people.
Millipedes are about an inch long and an eighth of an inch in diameter. When they die or when you pick them up, they coil into a spiral. They have 160 legs on the bottom, which is why they're millipedes, not centipedes. Millipedes come from damp areas of decaying organic matter, and that describes about half of our landscape, where we put down mulch or we have leaf litter or we have plant debris. It describes our fence rows. It describes our roadside ditches. It describes our CRP fields. There's lots of places we can grow millipedes. They are great migrators on damp, warm, humid nights, and they crawl around and they get into the house by mistake. Good news is they're harmless to you and your house.
Yeah, they are. They're just kind of a nuisance. I got a big bag of that powdered spectracide, and I was just going to go around the house with it with the broadcast spreader, and I think that might have been on there, and I hope that'll take care of them. But
yeah, unfortunately, it doesn't kill them quickly, so they're still going to crawl through it. They'll get into your house, and they'll die 11 hours later. Well, they're already inside by that point, and so the practical control is to keep vacuuming them, sweeping them up, and throwing them back outside.
All right, John, thanks a lot for your call. And next up, Jake in Davenport. Hi, Jake.
Hello.
Hi, what's your question?
Okay, so since the beginning of the season until now, it's still happening. I'm getting all my plants, like, of all kinds. I've had morning glories, tomatoes, peppers, cucumbers. They just get the young plants get pulled out of the ground with roots and all. Mm-hmm. And they're just kind of laying next to the hole. In the morning, I'll see them, put them back in the ground, and the next day, some different plants will be the same thing.
You've got a vicious mammal of some kind.
Yeah, it's a squirrel or a chipmunk or something. Is there any certain things to keep them away, maybe?
I'm not sure exactly what it is. Now, the squirrels are not active at night. So if this is occurring at night, it wouldn't be a squirrel. It typically wouldn't be a chipmunk. Sure. It might be, for example, possibly a raccoon, a possum, something of that nature, because they're very active at night.
Yeah, I hear lots of raccoons.
So if it's occurring at night, it probably is maybe a possum or a raccoon or something of that nature. It's not easy to stop that. You could try fencing of some type or something of that nature, but something that would physically keep them away might work.
Like a little cage around everything?
A cage, a dog.
Or a cat.
Something of that nature. Something that would scare them away, possibly.
Or stay out in the garden overnight and tell us what you see.
Yeah. Set up a little bait.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you.
Yep. Thanks a lot for your call. Let's get back to some email questions. This one's from Kevin. Richard, how close together can you or would you plant rows of espaliered apples? They are on semi-dwarf rootstock.
And they intend to espalier them?
Yeah.
Probably somewhere in the range of maybe 8 feet or so, maybe 10.
Okay. This one is from Stacy. She says, I live in Marion. Our yard is 8 years old, and just last week in the evening, we have orange-winged beetles rising from our grass. They are everywhere. Is there anything we can do to treat our lawn to avoid our grass and newly planted tree roots from being threatened?
Orange-winged beetles. That vaguely describes Japanese
right.
beetle. I think of it as coppery brown, but in the right light, it might look orange. She didn't give us a size to help pin this down. I guess at this point, I would say we need more information before we would rush out and buy an insecticide to see if that would help the situation. Could be Japanese beetles, in which case your lawn is not at risk at this point in time, but it will be in August. And if white grubs are a concern to you, you can buy an insecticide and put it on between now and the middle of August for control of white grubs. That's not controlling the beetle stage that's out now. That's controlling the next generation of larvae that will appear by the end of July. Otherwise, this would be a great one to hold one down, put it in the refrigerator till it's good and cold so it holds still. Take a good picture of it and send it to us on campus, and we'll see if we can give you a better answer.
All right. Here's a question from Virginia. She says, I'm growing Yukon Gold potatoes for the first time in many years in a raised bed. Okay. The plants are yellowish, mostly at the bottom. Only one has produced any flowers. Are they a lost cause?
No, I don't think they are. I would make sure they have some water because at this point they should be forming tubers. And if they're dry, they're not going to form very big tubers. So make sure they have water. I would water at least once a week, water them really well. And they don't have to flower to form tubers. So hopefully they're doing okay. They like moisture and moderate temperatures. So hot and dry is not good for them.
All right, and here's another potato question. This one's from Kevin in Davenport. He says, we have a half-acre plot planted in potatoes that we provide to local food pantries and meal sites. They're beginning to flower, but are heavily infested with Colorado potato beetles. We have applied 7 pesticide, a dusting powder, a generic insecticide, and dishwashing liquid water mix.
It's a tough one. We didn't used to have Colorado potato beetle, but they have made a comeback as well. There is no easy way to catch up. If the Colorado potato beetle brick red larvae are already half an inch long, your best bet is going to be hand picking because they're too large for an insecticide to kill. But early on, 7 spray would have worked very well. 7 dust appears to generally clings to the top of the plant and doesn't get a good distribution to kill the larvae everywhere they're feeding. Surround is another insecticide that can be used on that. That's the clay that creates a dusty condition on top of your plants that discourages some of the feeding. But it's a tough one, and as with many of our problems, start early is the best control option we have.
All right, and this one's from Greg. He says, half a dozen tomato plants are all growing nicely, 4 feet tall in cages, flowers, lots of green tomatoes on the way. One plant, however, is starting to suffer from disappearing leaves at the very top. We haven't been able to identify an insect, but what could be causing this, and how can we prevent further leaf loss?
I would start with a really careful inspection. Tomato hornworm is a caterpilar that can get 4 inches long and as big around as your thumb, but because they eat tomato leaves, they are exactly the same color as tomato leaves, and sometimes it's kind of hard to find them, especially when they're small. But disappearing leaves at the top of the plant, the tomato hornworm would be at the top of my list of things to look for.
So what can you do if you have them?
Oh, you pick them off with finger and thumb and throw them as far as you can, and they probably won't find their way back to their tomatoes. I suspect they could be breaded and sautéed in butter with a little garlic, and they would taste like fried green tomatoes. So,
yeah, you think they taste the same as tomatoes as well?
You are
Or is this your opinion about fried green tomatoes?
You are what you eat. And if your life was eating nothing but tomato leaves, wouldn't you taste like tomato leaves?
Oh, that's so scientific. Yeah, okay.
You are what you eat.
All right, and final question from Tom in Anamosa. He says, I want to know if I can use Roundup under spruce trees to control grass, creeping Charlie, and weeds without damaging the trees.
You should be able to. Make sure you don't get it on any of the tree itself.
All right, so you want to be very, very targeted.
Very selective, do that. Yes.
Oh, you know what? I have time for one more. This one's from Dell in Cedar Falls. I have a couple of hollyhock volunteers growing in my garden. I'd like to encourage them. Should I transplant them or just grow more from seed?
You can grow more from seed. You can allow those to actually go and flower. And then once they do, collect the seed and disperse those.
All right. And they're pretty good at volunteering.
Yes, they are.
Right?
Oh, yes, yeah. They are.
All right. Richard Duran, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
And Donald Lewis, thank you.
Thank you, Charity. It's always a pleasure.
Donald Lewis is a professor of entomology at Iowa State University. Richard Duran, Iowa State University Extension Horticulture Specialist. We will be back again next Friday with Horticulture Day on Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. The show is produced by Dennis Reese, Lindsay Moon, Ben Stanton, and Emily Woodbury. We had production assistance today from Chelsea Hoy. You can get in touch with us anytime. Email talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. You can follow us on Twitter at @IPRTalk. I'm there too, @CharityNebby. This is Talk of Iowa. Have a great weekend.